Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
And we are here to answer your questions, comment upon the veracity of your statements, discuss the markets, the environment, the economy, the ecology. What else are we here to do?
We're eco-warriors, economic warriors.
Your investments, stuff.
Not sports.
Yeah, anything but sports.
If you talk about sports, we're probably not going to know what's going on.
We're not very good sports, I guess. Anyway, so the telephone numbers to call if you would like to call in and talk to a couple of bald guys who
may or may not know what
right.
they're talking
but,
about.
But we've made a lot of mistakes over the years. And
what we know about this, yeah. though, is that we don't know as much as we thought we knew at one point. But by doing that, we know more than we did.
Well, actually, what we've done is sort of like a guided missile.
No, I want to hear this analogy.
Well, I was, when I was in the Army, I was in the initial testing and design and a lot of redesign and a lot of things about a anti-tank guided missile. Called the Shillelagh that no longer is in use.
It's outdated, and it was new and unmade before.
It was actually outdated before it came into existence, but still, that's beside the point. The logic in it, which I had to understand in order to understand how to test the missile, was a really interesting logic, and I've since checked that with your younger brother, John, who is a software developer, says the same thing applies in software when you're trying to get a missile to hit something in software. And the thing is, you can't aim the missile at the target.
No, that won't work.
Because
especially if the moving
it will not,
target.
Well, even if it's a moving or stationary target, what happens is the adjustment the missile is making trying to stay on the target as it gets closer and closer to the target will cause it to miss the target. So what you do is you have the missile note that it is not aimed at the target anymore. And subtract the notness, subtract its error from its targeting, you know, from where it's going. In other words, it says if I'm 5 degrees off to the right, then I'm going to subtract 5 degrees from the right side. It doesn't work
okay,
that way.
Okay. So quote of the day so far is subtract the notness.
That's right.
Okay.
And what you do is basically the missile has to be learning from its errors all the way to the target, and if it's learning from its errors, it will probably hit the target. If it is simply trying to hit the target, it will almost certainly miss the target. So this is the essence of our financial success, and my 32 years in the business.
Subtract the notness.
I have made or seen so many errors in investing and finance that I have such a huge library of notness.
We're really good at keeping records of what not to try again.
Right, and so what basically I do is avoid all the things that don't work, and lo and behold, what's left over has a fairly high probability of working.
It's like Occam's razor, only Occam's razor is just removing all of the obvious stuff. Well, most of the stuff we tried wasn't exactly obvious, but it just didn't work.
It was all the stuff that intuitively people think works, but doesn't actually work. So anyway, you're welcome to give us a call in here. By the way, the Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of this radio program, it's also the name of an investment advisor with its offices in Salado, which is registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission, in case you wish to make a complaint. And the telephone number is to call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
So we will speak to you in our roles as...
I like bagels. You can use the roll.
Scones.
Scones?
I would prefer scones.
Oh, all right.
Well, there are scones if you're in England, but there's scones if you're in Scotland.
Okay.
Anyway.
So
they're biscuits if you're in the United States.
We will speak to you in our biscuits as...
It's fiduciaries.
Fiduciaries. Okay, here we go.
Fido. Dogs.
Right. Exactly.
And the telephone number is to call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
So now we sit and wait for the phones to
ring. Right, we just twiddle our thumbs.
Da-da,
actually,
da-da,
I think we have a few things that we might want to talk about.
Have you ever tried twiddling? How do you twiddle a thumb?
You just flip
That's
one
like
over the
circulating,
other.
Circulating, but why is it
circle?
Called twiddling?
Hmm. I will have
there's
to
ask, a game called Twiddledy-Dinks.
Tweedledee and Tweedledum is not Twiddle.
Which has to do with flipping small pieces of plastic with other pieces of plastic.
Okay.
So one would think that Twiddle and Twiddledy-Dinks are similar, but they're not, apparently. Because
might have something to do with between, like tween,
I don't
twiddle,
know. This is one of those things that we need to tweed. Research carefully. You probably could get a grant.
Right. Well, the government could give us a lot of money on this.
That's right. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Wow. Oh,
well, I think you're on the air. I'm trying to see to it. That
Nope.
He hung up.
Well, we actually had somebody on the air and scared them away.
No, I think the little thing back here was...
There it goes. There we go. We're back.
And you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I was just a curiosity question. I was listening to your program last week, I believe, and you said when you started, you was a young man, and it's been quite a few years that you've been on the radio. Just out of curiosity, when did you bring your son in on your program? I'll take my answer off the air. You have
okay.
a good day, sir.
You too. Right. Thank you.
When did you bring me on the air?
Let's I don't know see. If I brought him on or came in here.
Yeah, you were panicking. When the radio program first got started, I think it was, 30 minutes long? And then it got moved to an hour.
It was an hour.
And then they asked you to take another hour, and that was about a year into it.
Actually, they didn't ask me. Let me correct your history here just a little bit. They didn't ask me to take another hour.
Another hour.
It's just that the hour before mine was potentially going to be filled with somebody who, as I recall, would have ensured that there would be nobody listening to me when I got on the radio. That's all I'm going to say. And as a result, I decided I'll go ahead and take that hour, so at least somebody will be listening in the second hour. Anyway,
I've been on the air with Old Baldy here, me being Young Baldy, since 1998. He was on in 97. So
he's been
16 years.
He's been here since the last century, since the last millennium.
Well before the Y2K bug.
Before the hills got dusty. And we have another caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk and information in the print media about inversion. And is this a new phenomena or I don't know. It just seems like it's getting a lot of play lately. I'll hang up on this.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Nothing like a simple question.
Inversion.
There. Do you want to handle it?
You go ahead.
Well, there's a couple of versions of inversion. So
that was a brilliant. The different versions of inversion involve version, inversion, reversion, and introversion, right?
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So you've got corporate inversion. You've got yield curve inversion. I'm trying to figure out what form of inversion has been in the news lately. Tax inversion, possibly. Probably tax inversion. So I'm going to go with that one. All right. We've actually talked about this over the last probably 3 or 4 years because it's becoming worse and worse. So I'm going to assume that we're talking about corporate tax inversion. Hopefully that's correct. If not, then...
Well, no. I know what he's talking about now.
What's that?
I got it. Okay. He's talking about corporate inversion.
Right.
Which is moving a corporation overseas while leaving it here.
That's what I'm talking about.
Got it.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm on the right track, then, if you believe it the same way I am. All right. We have, at the moment in the United States, the highest tax bracket in the world for corporate tax bracket. So corporate tax rates don't get any higher than they are in the United States. What that means is that if you come to the United States to build a business, and you build it in a corporate structure so that other people can own the business with you, before any shareholder gets profit, they have to pay taxes on it. Once the shareholder gets the taxes, or gets the profit after the taxes have been paid, they have to pay it again, because usually that's given in dividends. This is part of the reason why dividends are not as popular as they used to be, is because you have to pay taxes on it before and after. So a lot of companies are, we talked about this 2 weeks ago for sure. There's a major pharmaceutical deal that happened where a pharmaceutical company in Ireland was purchased by an American pharmaceutical company. And the whole reason for it was to move the headquarters overseas. If you earn your money outside of the United States and you pay the taxes elsewhere in the United States and you're a corporation.
You mean elsewhere than the United States?
Yes, outside. Somewhere else, say you're in Ireland. That's a good one. You make the money in Ireland because you're selling to people in Europe. The money is being accrued in Ireland. It doesn't come into the United States. Therefore, the United States taxes don't apply. Now, on one side of the aisle in Congress, they call that a tax loophole, because if you are an American company, then you should be paying American taxes, even if you've never brought that money anywhere near us, even if all of the transactions took place outside of the United States. I think that's a bit ludicrous. We're already charging a lot. And to say that if you make it anywhere, you have to pay our taxes, even though it didn't use any of our infrastructure to do it, I think that's a bit on the insane side. Here's the issue. A lot of people in Congress have been talking about closing that, and I'm going to put air quotes, so invisible air quotes around the loophole on the tax system, and making companies that make profits overseas pay taxes on that profit in the United States as well as overseas.
If they're based in the United States.
If they're based in the United
States. Here's where the inversion comes
right
in.
So this is why, and this has been going on for about a decade, really. It was a much smaller trickle before that. But as other countries have lowered their corporate tax rates and raised the revenue in the process, we have not. We've been waiting because the evil corporation should not have its taxes lowered. It's
well,
this horrible thing.
There's a different side of that, too.
And what has happened is that a lot of companies are moving their headquarters. They're no longer American companies because the taxes are forcing them away. Now, most of the shareholders are still American, and they still have to pay dividend taxes on any money that they make on these corporate earnings. But the corporate side doesn't have to pay that extra tax.
There's a backside to that, and it's really important to understand.
I like to let's talk about just for posterior's sake. Let's talk about the backside.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
We have the lowest personal income tax rates of any developed nation in the world, by far. Our personal income tax rates.
I wouldn't say any or by far, but
really, which ones?
Their personal income tax rate in Ireland's pretty low. It's a developed country.
Well, the personal income tax rate in Ireland goes up to 52%.
Okay, well, I don't want to get too nitpicky here, but
okay.
When half of our country, 52%. Of the population actually receives money from the United States government more than they pay taxes. If you're not talking about Social Security and such,
about Social Security and Medicare.
Then their tax rate is still quite equivalent if they're just paying that. So as far as by far, we do have a very low personal income tax rate in the United States. You're right. I'm just trying to parse it away from being the extreme any and by far.
I've looked at that in the last week, and Ireland also has about half of their working population, half the families in their working population paying no income taxes.
That's exactly what I said.
Okay.
Yeah.
But their top rates, the rates for the rest of the people, are much higher than ours.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, one of the reasons that half the working families in the United States, actually it's 48, the 52 do pay taxes, I think, don't pay income taxes is largely because the biggest, and let's talk about that then. The biggest piece of those people who don't pay income taxes, the largest component in that group, are people who are retired who are living on some little beyond Social Security. In other words, they may have some small pension, some small income in addition to their Social Security, but because of the over 65 tax credit and the fact that there's two people in the family, and sometimes they have dependents even though they're over 65, the largest component in those people who are not paying taxes, not paying income taxes, are basically poor retired people, old poor people. The second largest group is people who are making very, very low income but have two or more children. And what happens, of course, is something called the earned income tax credit that gets given to people who are A, working, and B, have children, which is in essence a refund of part or all of their Social Security and Medicare taxes. Otherwise, they would be paying the same. And actually, they don't get it all back. They only get half of it back at max because their employers, or if they're self-insured, half of it is still being paid. So the lowest rate any of these working people are paying is about 7.5%, but they are paying that 7.5%, which is why I'm a little bit astonished when I hear somebody say half the people are not paying any form of income taxes. The payroll tax is a tax based on income, and the lowest you can go on that is about 7.5%, even if you're getting earned income tax credit. So that's, somebody can do some research and find me wrong there. But what I'm trying to talk about is the corporate income tax rate and the fact that our income tax rates in the United States are lower than any developed country that I know of in my research. If you, now you have to, and again, we have to plug in the taxes that are the total taxes that are being paid mm-hmm. for Medicare, Medicaid, and the equivalent in those other countries.
Right. Well, I'm looking at those numbers right now.
Okay.
And if the max federal tax rate is what we're looking at, the max rate on federal, state, local, that includes payroll tax and otherwise.
Okay, if you'll throw those in for
55.9% in the United States.
Right.
Let's say Canada.
But I was just talking about the 52%. When I said 52% in Ireland, it did not include local taxes.
Canada, 50%. That federal, state, provincial, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's the max. Austria, 50%. So I'm not saying we don't have the
Austrian tax, and I'm fairly confident the Canadian tax are federal taxes.
It's federal, provincial. I'm looking at the summary. I'm looking at the combination here. Yeah, Iceland.
Well, as a percentage of GDP, if you want to go back and look at it as a percentage of GDP, our personal taxes are lower than certainly most, if not all, other developed nations. Now, somehow or another,
there are a few that are lower, but most others. You are correct.
What I'm trying to say is, as a nation, we pay a lower personal income tax as a percentage of our total income than do other nations.
Right. And as an example, just so that everybody out there knows that I'm not trying to argue the concept of what you're saying, Sweden is a great example. Sweden's top tax rate for federal, local, all that stuff is 57%, but their national insurance, which you have to pay, is 31.42%. So if you're in the 57% tax rate and you have a 31% national insurance program, then you're making 89% of your money goes to the government.
Right, and mortgages are not deductible, and you start down this list of things that are not deductible there that are deductible. The bottom line to it is, if we look at a percentage of our GDP, personal income taxes constitute in the United States a smaller percentage than, I'll just go ahead and say, than certainly the average of other developed countries. Is that fair?
Of many other, yes, absolutely.
Okay. And while our corporate taxes are higher, okay,
you're right.
Now, the difficulty is, and by the way, I'm in favor of lowering corporate taxes.
Yeah.
I'm in favor of a complete overhaul where our corporate tax rate in the United States is approximately equivalent to the tax rate that is seen in the European Union, which is pretty uniform. It's about 22% max tax rate. Ours is 38%. In the process, though, we would have to get rid of a host of deductions that are singled out, that are aimed specifically at certain types of corporations that have been around in many cases since the 1930s. For example, corporations that are involved in agriculture get to do some amazing tax deductions that were originally designed to benefit the individual farmer. And the backside to it is there's very little question that personal taxes would have to go up if it was going to be revenue neutral.
Right.
In other words, if we have a certain amount of money coming into the government right now.
I don't think so. I recognize what you're saying, but I think in corporate revenue, for sure, we're over the Laffer point.
Well, certainly.
If we lower that rate, revenue will go up. To remain revenue neutral, we can lower the rate and actually get revenue positive.
Well, the problem is, for example, I don't know if you're aware of this, General Electric, one of the more profitable companies in the United States, routinely doesn't pay any taxes.
Correct. The reason why they routinely don't pay taxes is because they've got headquarters for minor operations all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
If this is a great example. GE and Apple, Google, these three are, between those three, we have a significant stream of revenue. If we lowered the corporate tax rate, Apple has said that they want to bring the money here. And they're talking about $60 billion that's sitting out there. They want to bring it here. Just talking about the $60 billion for Apple, if you lowered our tax rate to, say, 15%, then what you're talking about is a significant stream of income mm-hmm. that the United States will not get unless they move it here.
Well, if they move it here, then the United States government would get no taxes. Because they've already paid the taxes on somewhere else.
Well, that's the idea is but that if our tax rate is a little bit higher, then the difference between the two is what they would pay.
If they, let's say, 15% and it's 22% in Europe, which is where they have a lot of the money.
Yeah, they might move it to 24%.
Okay, let's say they brought it here and they didn't have to pay any taxes on it.
Then they're going to reinvest
it
here.
But they would reinvest it here. That's the key.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing to get. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. While you're on the tax subject, maybe you can answer a question I always wondered. And you're historic or history buffs, so you're probably the best ones to answer this. We once had a revolution with a catchphrase, you know, no taxation without representation. I've always wondered, what was our rate of taxation that precipitated that revolution compared to the tax rate we have today? Do we have a higher or lower rate today?
That's a fascinating question.
Well, maybe you can answer that and I'll hang
okay,
up.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, the tax rate on tea is what we had whole... So it was a tariff, basically.
It was a value-added tax.
Right. And from the Tea Tax Act of 1773. Aren't you glad that I know
that?
The Tea Tax Act. And it was levied directly on the colonies because the king and the parliament believed that the colonies were not paying their fair share.
And actually, our tax rates were less than those in England, substantially less than those in England.
Right.
Because our property taxes were going to local government.
Right.
Property tax was the primary tax at the time. And all our property taxes stayed local, and yet the British were stationing some substantial numbers of troops here to keep the Indians from coming in and raiding.
Right.
And it was costing them a lot of money.
So
and it was raised in Parliament that we're spending a lot of money on these colonists, but they're not sending us anything.
Right. For simplicity, what we'll say is that the tax rate was much lower when the Boston folks dressed up as Native Americans and went and dumped a lot of tea into the harbor. The fact that they were taxed without representation, that they didn't get to say how the money was spent, and that, yes, the British government was spending a lot of money to protect them. They were also housing the troops in the houses of the citizens of Boston, of the citizens of the colonies. The troops could just come in and take their stuff. So in one sense, it was a lower tax rate. In another sense, if they could just come and take your house without compensating you, it was more than 100% tax. It was a tax on all previous earnings ever and taking it all at once. And that was not that unusual either.
It actually was kind of to say the least, an extremely silly war. the United States actually, the colonies in North America were actually benefiting tremendously from their relationship with England economically. We were pretty much left alone, except for these infractions at a, you know, and again,
this is
soldiers could come and take up, and they, if they showed up and said, you have to feed us and let us live in your house,
and you go live in the barn.
Well, no, they didn't go to that extreme. They just basically said, if you have an extra, you have an extra bedroom. It wasn't, they didn't take it to the extremes that the propaganda of the time suggested. The issue was not what was going on. The issue was when we, the colonies, when the 13 colonies got together and they raised the issue with the king said, in essence, stick it in your ear.
Yeah.
Or not quite that gently.
He was a little bit of a loon at the time.
He was, yes, he was going insane at Mach 5, and he said, your colonists, which all goes back to an interesting little event that happened in 1745. The most of the people who lived in New England, and a lot of the people who lived, particularly in the hinterlands of the southern states.
1749, if you're talking about the Jacobite uprising in Scotland.
Was it 49 or 54?
The battle was called the 49.
Okay.
It was before the 49ers. It was a century before the 49ers.
I thought it was the 54. But anyway, okay. And I don't have that in front of me, so I could be wrong. But the point is that the Scots and the Jacobites in main part of England had risen up and tried to overthrow the grandfather of the George the First, and George the Second died young, so George the Third was on the crown when the in 1776. And believe me,
and 45 is when it started. It's just it,
oh, it's okay. 45. I was thinking of not 54. Yeah, it was 1745.
Right.
Anyway, in this war in 1745, still had the English in general rather ticked off, and as far as they were concerned, the colonies in the United States, with the notable exception of the Southern planters, the people who later were supported by the British in the Civil War, except for that group of people, were generally the 13 colonies in North America, not counting England, were generally not counting Canada, the Canadian colonies, were generally considered to be penal colonies. In other words, they had evicted entire families from their land and dropped them over there. And believe it or not, the English were still quite upset about the fact that the people that they had dropped over here, by and large, were people who had taken up arms and tried to overthrow their government.
Right.
I don't know why they would be upset about that.
Well,
you know?
They were supporting the previous government, but still, they weren't very upset.
Yeah, well,
they were pretty upset.
Parliament and the king in general were pretty much unhappy about this.
Yeah.
And so the king, and I'm going to think, you're going to think this a little strange. One of the reasons we invaded Iraq is because George W. Bush was ticked off by the fact that the dictator of Iraq had tried to kill his father.
Right. Same sort of thing.
And it was, you know, these things echo through history. So the king treated us like criminals. He treated the American colonies petitions in general like we were in prison and were demanding certain rights and protections,
right.
and
he
freedoms.
Saw this particular tax was to try to get the colonies to buy tea from one company.
Right.
A company that was struggling. And so that company went to Parliament and to the king and said, we would like to take the tea instead of going back to Britain, getting the tax stamp in Britain and then taking it to the colony. We would like to charge the tax directly in the colony.
Right. We would like to sail straight from India or wherever the tea is grown to North America.
And in doing so, they got to keep a significant piece of profit, which caused them to be more profitable, obviously. And then they so.
You mean to say that the Parliament of England and the Executive England would give special treatment to one company? Special tax treatment?
Yeah. We should...
How terrible.
We should have a little history lesson about Chiquita Banana in Guatemala for American reference.
So the tax rate they had back then was a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of the tax rates we pay today. But we are far, as a nation, far, far, far more prosperous, and our standard of living is right. so much higher than theirs
and,
at this point.
And the benefit of the government. I realize that the government is, and many folks in the Tea Party today think that the government provides no benefit, but then when you start talking about the armed services, they go, oh, okay, that's a benefit, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk
highways?
About when
highways?
You talk about highways, when you talk about retirement from the military or retirement in Social Security or all of that,
or
those
Medicare,
are all part
yeah.
of the tax code.
And you just listed about 90% of the tax code right there.
Yeah, so Medicare, retirees, that's pretty much the majority of it. Then you throw in the defense, and what we're talking about is, yes, we have a much higher tax today than we did then, but we have representation, which is really what the colonists were upset about.
Maybe we do and maybe we don't.
And on top of that, probably the biggest reason why we had the war that we had for revolution here in the colonies is because a very strong Tory, and by Tory I mean a supporter of the king, a king's party person, was called back to Parliament to give testimony on the state of the colonies. And this man is a brilliant man. He was part of the Royal Society, which was a group of scientists that researched under the direct stamp of approval of the king, and it was one of his greatest organization for science at the time. The head of that organization is Hawking at this point, who was Newton earlier to this.
Mm-hmm.
So this man was called back before Parliament, all expecting to give the things that, you know, the good things about that's still going on in the colony. And just before this, there had been a bad report about something in the colony, and that's kind of lost. But Parliament is not known for its civil behavior to people that are called in front of it. Well, this man's name was Ben Franklin, and he was a great supporter of the king and of Parliament. He was called in front of Parliament, and he was berated back and forth for about 4 hours, everybody involved in Parliament giving him a hard time, is to put it lightly, calling him names, yelling at him, and he wasn't allowed to leave. So when he got back, he was no longer a Tory, and he owned a lot of newspapers.
Yes. He was, and well, actually, not only did he own newspapers.
He was also part of the Intellectual Society of the Colonies.
Well, he was more than that. He owned Poor Richard's Almanac, which the common people, the equivalent of the local Tea Party
everybody
of the day.
Everybody read it.
Read it. And his wit and witticisms in there, which, by the way, he...
Right up there with Mark Twain with that.
Yeah. He started lambasting the British in general.
Yeah.
And inflamed the local tea parties literally across the country. Only they weren't called tea parties.
No.
They were called Sons of Liberty.
Yeah, and if you think back to, you know, we look in our history at the point when the colonists got dressed up as Native Americans and run and throw the tea in the water. The reality is that it took place a significant portion of time before that, and it happened with short-sighted insults given to Ben Franklin. It's one moment in history that I can pretty well pin the whole revolution as it happened on that moment.
Yeah. I think what it... Yeah, I completely...
Ego violation.
We need to...
Do not violate the ego of Americans.
Right. Particularly if their name is Ben Franklin.
Right.
We're going to play some commercials, and we'll be back on the other side, and we'll talk a little more about taxation and representation and things of that ilk. If you'd like to give us a call, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we were talking about the complexity of taxes and tea parties and revolutions and stuff.
Yes.
Actually, if anyone wanted to have a revolution right now, it would be Puerto Rico. They pay U.S. income taxes, but they don't have any representatives in Congress.
Yeah, they do. They just don't get a vote. They get to sit there and watch everybody else vote.
We had an observer in Parliament, too, but it didn't do any good, and we didn't have a vote. We didn't have any say about where the taxes
all they back. Have to do is make a vote, and then they get a vote in Congress as well.
Yes, but the problem, of the difficulties, of course, that they can't make up their minds either, or
no.
either, as the
no.
case may be. It is the whole issue
Puerto Rico should just be, they should just vote to be a state. That should, that.
Well, they, no, they could either vote to be a state or vote to be an independent country. Actually, there's a lot of advantages for both sides for them being whatever it is they are right now, which is a commonwealth, which effectively is a colony. One of the difficulties they're running into right now is that corporations, up until recently, corporations in, that were headquartered in Puerto Rico, while they paid local Puerto Rico income tax, did not have to pay federal income tax. But that was reversed a few years ago, and since then, Puerto Rico has been careening towards bankruptcy, which brings us to some important personal issues, personal finance issues. And as a result of them careening towards bankruptcy, their municipal bonds are well, they may not be in good shape, but they pay really, really, really attractive interest rates.
Yeah, well, that's what you, when you have interest rates paid at that rate, it's because they're afraid they won't be able to pay it.
Do you know that you can get insured Puerto Rican bonds that
really?
Are paying like 7 or 8% tax-free?
Whoa. Well,
you can.
Yeah, you can get insured Puerto Rican bonds that are paying extremely high interest rates.
Right.
The insurance will probably fail if it fails, but you could. You could get that, yeah.
Of course, the fact that the insurance company that insures the Puerto Rican's bonds is currently in bankruptcy.
Right.
No problem.
Well, no problem there. What's the problem with that?
Well, we had some good news this week. We probably ought to talk about it.
This is part of the reason why I think that we are still very healthily in a bull market.
We had
a pretty significant dip in the market this week.
And I think there's a possibility we're seeing the front end. By the way, this is normal July behavior, but it's coming in August. It's like the weather we're having outside right now here in Central Texas. Huh?
What's going on here?
This is August in Central Texas? You must be kidding. You have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Caller.
I think somebody's there.
Hmm.
Switches are all in the right position.
Okay.
Is there somebody there on 773-1400? Okay, well, I'm going to hang up on you. You can call back if you were really there. Hey.
The good news that we were going to talk about that caused the dips in the market, sort of.
Yeah, we had the GDP, the gross domestic product of the United States, come in for the second quarter. By the way, this is only a preliminary estimate, which will be changed multiple times over the next several years.
Oh, yeah.
But it came in at an annualized rate at 4%, just like the first quarter, which was a negative 2.9, is now down to a negative 2.1.
Right.
And subject to further revisions for the next 2 years.
We had the non-farm payroll, which is basically we're talking about how many people, new jobs created.
Non-farm.
Right, non-farm.
Non-farm.
209,000 jobs.
No, wait a minute. That was the same thing as I say about non, you know, what you do is you focus on the non-right things and avoid them, okay?
Avoid the notness.
So it's like the non-farm job payroll.
We had personal income, which is one of those really, really cool facts to watch because, you know, we talk about during the recession, people's income hasn't fully recovered yet. Well, personal income was up, this is a non-annualized rate, 0.4% in June, which means it's up. Disposable personal income year over up year is up 3.9%, which means most people have, on average, about 4% more left over, more income than they had a year ago.
But this is an interesting thing about that income that came out today. It was a really good article in Real-Time Economics and Wall Street Journal.
Mm-hmm.
People are not spending their income increases.
Good.
They're using it to pay off debt still.
Yep.
Which is why we see retail sales growing at, I like the term,
slower rate.
Anemic rate.
Yeah. But it's still growing.
And which is why if you go out and investigate what I call the marginal retail sales organ. I was at a photography place spending more money than I.
You can spend money without knowing it in those places. You walk in the door and suddenly you're.
Well, and I had to have a camera fixed.
Credit cards fall out of your pocket.
And it was expensive to fix the camera. But at any rate, the when I was in there and asking about, you know, just generally talking to people, I found that a lot of people there who are in their 50s and even 60s who have moved from other places around the country where in large camera chains have gone bankrupt.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I'm seeing and a lot of people are seeing is that while spending is starting to pick up again, spending on marginal items like buying high-end cameras just has not recovered.
Look at the tablet market. You know, the low-end PC market and the tablet market is not booming like it used to be because people can make do with the old tablet that they have.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hello. This is Scrooge in Harker Heights.
Hello, Scrooge in Harker Heights.
Now, is your last name McDuck or just Scrooge?
It's got a Mac in it.
Oh, okay.
Are you royalty? You Scrooge von Harker Heights.
No, not royalty.
Well, von from in German is von, and if you have von in front of your last name,
yeah, that's royalty.
Then that means you're nobility,
or at least nobility. Yeah,
you're probably nobility.
Yeah.
Well,
you own property.
What I called about, and I'm going to have to get off the phone after I present my case here. I've been curious, and particularly in view of a recent report that says that the household net worth has been reduced 36% over the past 10 years.
I read that. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I read it.
Yeah, I don't, the accuracy of the thing.
Their numbers.
But even if it's just some part of that, that's a lot of money. So it occurs to me that, and as I understand, about $3 trillion were taken out of the economy.
Correct, right.
In the fiasco we had in about 2008.
Well, it depends on when you're measuring, because if it was, if you're measuring
measuring about that time.
Okay, well, it was more than that. It was more like 11 then.
It was more, it was pretty close to 1 year's GDP for the United States.
It was about $11 trillion at that point.
Yeah, it was a lot of money, that's
yes,
for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, a lot of that stuff was allegedly backed up by paper, credit default swaps and whatnot. Sausage of all kinds. Now, first thing off, it is the pumping the economy with the money that just went poof during that period of time.
Yeah, it has to be repeated.
Is one problem. The second problem is what is going to be done with the paper that's still floating out there. Now, I've got to hang up.
Okay.
And I'd appreciate it. I'll listen to you.
You obviously are thinking a lot, and I don't think you qualify as a Scrooge.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
All right.
That's my pseudonym.
All right.
Okay.
Nom de guerre.
Nom de actually more like nom de economy.
All right. Well, before we get started on the direct answer to the question.
Well, it was a complex question, too.
Yeah. First, let me say something about net worth. Net worths are very, very imaginary. I'm going to say that again. They're imaginary. A net worth means that if you take the value of all of your assets and the value of all of your debt and you put them together so that the debt negatives on the positive of your assets, then this is what you're worth as a person, your net worth.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that most of the figures that you use for net worth are not actual figures. If you think about, for instance, your house, you're living in your house. You've been living in your house, say, we're going to use this as an example because it's easiest. You've been living in your house 20 years. Your net worth grew without you having any extra money because of that net worth during the boom years when the bubble was forming in the real estate market. You got more and more assets, and your debt looked smaller and smaller as a percentage. You didn't have any more money in your bank account. But your net worth was getting really, really, really big. And then now you're still living in the same house. It's still a nice house. You still enjoy living there.
Mm-hmm.
The house is worth less than it was in 2007. So your net worth has dropped. So when you look at it from that perspective, no real change has happened to you. You may still have the same job you had. You may be retired. There's a lot of things that could happen there. Now we can go to another scenario where a person has been flipping homes. They had a lot of extra money in their bank account, and now they have a lot of debt that they didn't have before and no money.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about net worth, it depends on who you are and what you're doing, how liquid your net worth is at the time that it's being measured.
Right.
So these are two things that have to be looked at when you're talking about the actual net worth. And we're talking about $11 trillion disappearing out of the economy. We're not really saying the dollars themselves, although there were a significant number of dollars that left. We're talking about the value of assets as well.
And again, with that net worth story, I read through it, and then I went and tried to find the – I found the study, and it became more distorted the deeper I dug into it.
It was put together by the Russell Sage Foundation.
I don't know who they are, but
– I don't either, which is a telling
tell
statement.
You something
we read this stuff all the time, and I've never heard of them before.
An awful lot of studies come out. For starters, since your question is about the 36% drop in net worth, supposedly, that was a newspaper article, I want to take that article and follow it backwards, okay?
Okay, let's do that. It came from the printing press.
No, the people who reported on it generally do not know common stock from livestock.
Correct.
They don't know anything about economics. They know about putting words together on a piece of paper, but they really... their understanding of what they're writing about is minimal, to say the least. Then if you go back to the AP picked it up, and when the Associated Press picked it up and they ran it out there, the point was, again, somebody wrote an article for the AP that didn't understand what they were writing about. They simply said there's a study there, and it looked pretty sensational, and as a result, it got picked up in the news and carried about quite a lot. But if you follow this thing all the way back, as Jake was saying, your definitions of net worth can be really, really crazy. But even beyond the definitions of net worth, when we talk about the average American, what do we mean by it? We have to go back and see. What are you talking about average? Are you talking about the typical American? Or are you saying
they're even saying median, which is even more
right.
difficult because you're not talking about an average. You're talking about the person in the middle now.
And the problem with what they did in this 36% drop is they brought some things into net worth in 2000. For example, stock options.
Right.
And what you have is a very disproportional quantity of net worth in the year 2000 that was in the upper maybe 5% of the nation that was very artificial net worth but made them feel very good and go out and buy yachts and things like that, that is simply not there anymore. And again, it happened again in 2000 with, for instance, there were a lot of people that owned stock in banks that don't own that stock anymore. They may own it, but it's now worthless because a lot of banks went under. So there's a lot of factors that went into that that were what I call effervescent money.
And
The value was technically there, and you're talking about houses. Houses have had an effect, but from 2000 to the present, not that huge an effect. The big thing was there was an awful lot of things that were overvalued in 2000, including the stock market.
Right.
And the fact that there was a value placed on it does not equate, as Jake was saying, to money.
Unless you sold. At that point, if you sold all of your assets and paid off all your debts, then your net worth would be real, but you would have no place to live.
But the problem is that everybody decided to sell pretty much at the same time, and as a result, they didn't get what they thought it was worth earlier.
Which is what happened in 2007 and 2008.
And we talk a lot about this with our clients. There is a world of difference between real value and assumed value. There's even a bigger difference between value and money.
Yeah.
And it's really, really important to know what all of those three things mean when we talk about net worth. Debt, though, on the other hand, tends to be very real no matter how you approach it.
You've got to pay that, right.
And we're getting close to being out of time.
Yeah. If you would like to contact us off the air,
For
this hour. We've got another hour coming up. But if you'd like to contact us off the air, during the weekend we have voicemail waiting locally at
947-1111.
You can also reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. That's also voicemail. Or you can reach us by email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com, and you'll get podcasts, and you'll get to look at our ugly mugs and the beautiful people that work with us.
Way ahead of schedule.
Yeah. Well, I figure we can do this without rushing then. So
without rush?
Well, that's another program.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So the webpage is tpwc.com. We have a contact us information there. You can read about our philosophy and so on. Hopefully we'll be talking a lot more about the news that has come out. We barely touched on it.
Yeah.
There's so many articles to talk about next hour.
Well, there was a pro-cyclicality study on insurance and pension funds.
Pro-cyclicality?
Yes.
Wow, that's where the pros get sick and...
Well, I mean, I thought it was a cool study, which should tell you a lot about it.
Anyway, until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and Jake McClure.
KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.